Welcome to the Unscripted SEO Interview Podcast. Yes, it's 100% unscripted, 100% unrehearsed, 100% unedited, and 100% real. I'm your host, Mark A. Preston. I want my guests today to introduce themselves just so I don't actually mess up. Hello.
Hello there. I'm Julian Goldie, YouTuber, SEO agency owner. Talk a lot about AI.
Okay. And for the people listening to this and watching this podcast who doesn't know your background, could you give us like a whirlwind tour of when you started in the industry and where you are now and what's happened in between?
Yeah, sure. So I've been doing SEO for like the last 8 years or so and building my own sites, doing SEO as a service as well, and just growing it from there, really. So I originally started off just myself, and now I have a team of 50 people. We work with over 100 clients doing SEO for them. I have 77,000 subscribers on YouTube, probably about 200,000 followers across all of my platforms, maybe more. And yeah, just learning about SEO every day ever since.
Right. Well, it is a learning game. I mean, I've been doing this, 23 years, and every day is a learning game. You know, something changes and we have to adapt to it and see where we can get to. But from you, the YouTube side of it, how have you managed to build up your YouTube audience?
That's an interesting one, actually, because, you know, one of the things about my YouTube channel is that most of the traffic actually comes from Google search. So it's not directly from YouTube. I think about 96% of it comes from Google search and Google Discover and that sort of thing. And so one of the ways that has seriously scaled it, I would say, over the last 12 months, is just showing lots of experiments, lots of case studies, and just providing as much value as possible, right? So, and also consistency, right? So every day I've published at least one video, sometimes more, on YouTube. And yeah, just been doing that for the last 12 months, and that's helped grow the channel massively.
So you say because a lot of the traffic's coming from search for your YouTube channel, then would you say you are a YouTube SEO sort of specialist? Or is there any consistency things you do to make sure it appears in search?
Yeah, I'm not going to be SEO. Like, it just happened by accident. Like, I never planned to get that much traffic from Google, but I was pretty happy with it. And so one of the things that really helps is when you publish at that frequency and that intensity, you get a lot of data. And it's really in the data analysis that you can quickly understand, okay, these are the topics that take off. These are the keywords that are taking off. And these are the topics that get pushed, not just on YouTube, but across all sorts of different platforms. You know, for example, like I mentioned, Google Discover, Google SEO, and then a lot of this stuff gets shared as well. So we see a lot of traffic from, for example, WhatsApp. So basically, yeah, when you get that amount of data, you can easily figure out, okay, these are the topics that take off and these are the trending search terms and these are the sort of click-through rates you can expect on each video. And then from there, the more data you get, the better you get at the game. And it's really about just that iterative feedback. So if you can analyze the inputs, you can easily understand the outputs. And then again, that feeds back into the machine as another input for you to analyze.
Right. Do you have any sort of structure to map out the videos that you're producing?
So the way that I like to do it is I lead with a hook. So I always hook people in. If you see the way that I spend the first 30 seconds, it's all about, okay, here's what you're going to learn today. You're going to get it all for free. These are the sort of things you can expect, right? And that just creates an open loop where people naturally as humans want to close it later. And so that's why they keep watching. And then from there, it's about just fulfilling on the promise that you actually offered in the hook, right? So for example, if you're like, I'm going to give you 200 ChatGPT SEO prompts today for free, then in the main part of the content, you really want to stay very, very focused on delivering on that promise, right? So you might go through all the prompts, show them how it works, do a screen share, that sort of thing. And then the final part is really about CTA, right? Because there's no point getting the views and there's no point getting the traffic unless you can convert it into either sales or leads. And so from there, I take a conclusion in like the final sort of minute or so. And I'm just like, right, here's all the things that I promised you. Here's all the things that I delivered. I've talked you through it step by step and delivered everything that I promised today. And by the way, if you want to learn more, feel free to book in a free SEO strategy session. And that's basically the format for every single video.
Right. I've heard this a lot. When you're saying that, formatting the videos properly, you know, really does make a difference. But touching what you said about consistency, how long was it before you started seeing traction on your YouTube channel?
Well, it's quite an interesting one. It depends what you determine as traction, right? So previously, when I was first starting YouTube, which was pretty much around the COVID time, when I was starting out then, I would only get like 200 or 300 views per video, but the content was laser targeted on the subject, right? So it'd be like how to set up an outreach campaign and get backlinks for free. And like that sort of video will only reach a tiny amount of people, but the people that it does reach would potentially become clients because it's so targeted, right? And so in terms of traction, I actually landed my first ever client from the first week that I started doing YouTube. And then from there, it just snowballed. And in terms of views and traction, really only over the last sort of 12 months. So if you go back 12 months ago, probably had about, I would say, 3,000, 4,000 subscribers. And then it just avalanched into 77,000, which it is today.
Wow. Well, my little YouTube channel that I don't really structure, I don't really, you know, do anything with, is tiny compared to that, believe me. So like obviously talking to you, it feels like I need to do a lot more structuring with it, you know, if I want to really grow it.
So the way that I would recommend is that you try lots of different formats and you just see which one takes off the best, right? So for example, for my audience, even though we're in the same industry, so you're in SEO, I'm in SEO, our audiences might be totally different in terms of the way they react, the type of content they like, how they like to be spoken to, even the types of SEO strategies you talk about, right? And so when you create a lot of different types of content, whether that's edited videos, tutorials, interviews, etc., you will gather enough data to quickly figure out which videos are going to perform the best and your audience really likes, and which videos are going to perform terribly and you should never do again, right? And I'll give you a couple of examples of this. So for me previously, if I interview a big name, like for example, let's say Matt Dickety or Carl Roof, these videos as an interview will take off. They'll get like 10,000 views, really happy with that. If I interview someone that isn't so well known and people aren't actively searching for that name and aren't particularly interested in the name, but would love to learn about the content, typically those videos will only get like 1,000 or 2,000 views. And so I know as a conclusion that there's a clear correlation between the size of the name that's interviewed on the channel and the amount of views that person gets. It's the same as well. If I look pre-ChatGPT and post-ChatGPT in terms of the content and the case studies that I create, I know that there's a huge amount of demand for ChatGPT related stuff and a tiny little demand for link building outreach. But as your audience grows, that doesn't necessarily mean that money you make is going to correlate directly, right? So you might trade your older audience for a new audience and you might grow 10x in size, kind of like we did. But that doesn't mean you're going to make 10x as much money. Because not all that audience is, you know, when it gets so big, is going to be super targeted to what you sell.
Right. So touching upon money side, how do you personally make your money?
So personally, I have a bunch of SEO websites. So I make money from that, doing, you know, affiliate and ads and that sort of thing. And then additionally, I have some coaching programs, some info products, those sort of things. They make money on the back end. And then I also have an agency. So I provide SEO as a service too.
All right. I didn't know you had an agency.
Yeah. So typically this is another thing about YouTube, is that what I like to do is give massive value on the front end. And then when people come into the funnels, you sort of, you know, you, that's when you can deliver the upsells. But I think you have to give value first. And then once people trust you, then you can sell to them.
Yeah. What? Regarding your agency, what type of clients and what size of clients do you usually work with?
All sorts, really. So, for example, you know, in my SEO mastermind, we have people who are just starting out and learning SEO. And then you know, in my agency, we have some clients that are just outrageously big. You're talking like billion-dollar companies, yeah.
Right. Now, when you touched upon GPT and AI, has your opinion on how SEO should use tools like ChatGPT changed throughout the time?
Yeah, I think so. Because, for example, if you look 12 months ago when I first started using ChatGPT, it was really about, okay, wow, you can generate an article in one click. That's amazing. But the more that I use this type of tool, the more I realize that actually what differentiates everyone is not the tool that they're using or the prompts or even the workflow. It's about how you edit the content and quality control it and also add some unique elements to it.
Right. Now, we need to touch upon this latest update or multiple updates in one. And what sort of impact have you personally seen?
Well, for me personally, are you still on there? I don't know if you froze. For me personally, well, obviously, I don't know if you heard about the situation, but a lot of SEO influencers got manually targeted, I would say. And so if you had ownership of a website in Google Search Console, most SEO influencers I know have been hit in terms of receiving a manual action penalty. And it wasn't necessarily because they were doing anything wrong. It was more, I think, just to set it an example and say, right, you know, stop talking about certain things in public anymore.
Have you seen a pattern on, when you say hit, you talk about the manual action, not the actual algorithm, is that correct?
Yeah, algorithmically, I've not seen any sort of hit at all across my websites. You know, my private case studies that weren't in the same Google Search Console, they're doing totally fine.
Right. So the manual actions, I did a tweet the other day. I relate this to the time when Google hit Interflora, because then it was a big name that a lot of people followed. And they say, oh, well, making an example of things. But I'm hearing that a lot of sites that got hit have started to come back. Have you seen any sort of impact of that?
Yeah, I've seen it. I've seen a huge, I mean, not personally across my portfolio, it's been totally fine. But like across my YouTube audience, there's been loads of reports of reversals. I've seen lots of GSC screenshots, which are basically like up here, down after the update, and then they do some sort of reversal straight back up. It's quite an interesting period. The other thing that I've heard across my audience is that a lot of sites have been delisted, de-indexed from Google, and then been indexed back the next day. Yeah, so quite interesting, really.
Right. So knowing what you know about what's going on with the updates and all these manual things and everything that's going on at the moment, the SEO craziness of it is how, regarding AI content, like obviously you've tested massively with AI content, how should SEOs be thinking about that and how can they use it to benefit things in a non-risk way?
Yeah, I think the best uses of ChatGPT, if you want to use it in a non-risk way, probably focusing on the other elements outside of content creation. Because if you look at Google's helpful guidelines recently, they talk about scaled content and how to avoid that. And so really what they're trying to put a signal out of, from my interpretation, is that they don't want people to just generate lots of content massively at scale without editing it and quality controlling it. So I think all the elements around the workflow without actually creating the content are really good for AI. So for example, keyword research, planning your content, entities, latent semantic indexing, keyword clustering. These are all really powerful ways to use ChatGPT without it even touching your content. And then additionally, I think that post content creation, you can use ChatGPT in lots of interesting ways. So for example, you can take Google's helpful content guidelines and you can compare your existing content versus the criteria in Google's helpful content guidelines and compare them quantitatively with ChatGPT and say, right, how do I score for this? How do I score for that? And how can I improve it? And give me some actionable tips. And I think that's a really powerful way to use ChatGPT, but quality control it at the long way.
Yeah. Now that's something I haven't personally tried. I'm going to try that and see what happens, but I'm not sure if I want to see the result. But like I say, it's a good guide. And I think there's too many people in the industry just looking and has looked at GPT as just the copy and paste scenario. They just mass copy and paste in whatever it spits out. And I think that's the type of content that doesn't really add much value to the internet and to the customer base.
Yeah, I think that's the sort of thing. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen, but I think the more you can quality control invest in your content, the better it's going to be for Google, for you, and for your audience. And so one of the things that I put out openly on my channel is a content quality checklist where it has all the steps, literally from picking the keywords down to fact checking, making sure that ChatGPT doesn't hallucinate, inserting some internal and external links, entities, etc., and making sure that step by step you can quality control the content and make it as good as it possibly can be.
Right. Now, because some of your sites did receive a manual penalty, and oh my God, SEO Twitter was like crazy world. You know, basically a lot of people were saying things based on the unknown. You know, someone's perception and opinion of things. But personally, I'm a person that, you know, I don't say things unless I gather the facts first. Do you think as an industry, we need to come out of this blaming each other game and what's this and why are you saying that and what's going on? Just from a pure personal perception from yourself, because obviously there's been some things said regarding some of the things you've tweeted recently. What's your thoughts around that?
Yeah, for me personally, I'm all about positivity and just raising people up. I think that a rising tide lifts all boats, and it's all about helping each other and supporting each other in the community.
Yeah. So, okay. Now, if Google didn't exist, well, when I say Google didn't exist, what would you be doing differently than you're doing now?
In terms of SEO?
Yeah, because for me, SEO is not just about Google. It's what, you know, taking Google out of the equation is what other factors would you be doing? What other marketing would you be doing online to build your business?
Yeah, so for me, I consider myself a marketer, right? So I wouldn't say I've said it many times, so I wouldn't say I'm the best SEO in the world, right? I consider myself more of a marketer and a business owner. And so the way that I see digital marketing is that you're building a brand, right? But you should be very quantified in terms of how you use it. So if, for example, Google didn't exist, for me, what I like to do is make sure that I'm using all the channels and creating systems for every single channel, you know, whether that's a Facebook group, whether that's YouTube, whether that's Udemy, whether that's LinkedIn, it could be Twitter, etc. And just tracking, okay, what are the inputs and what are the outputs? This is the way that my mind works in terms of systems, right? So tracking, okay, if we do 5 tweets a day, how many sales calls do we get booked in? If we do 10 tweets tomorrow, how many sales calls do we get booked in? Is it correlated? You know, like, for example, if we do more or if we do new or if we do better in terms of Twitter or any other sort of digital marketing channel, are we going to get more outputs? Are we going to grow the business, right? And so literally on a spreadsheet across all of my marketing platforms, it's all about building the brand, but making sure that not just are we building the brand, but that we're getting a direct ROI out of each channel. And so in terms of SEO and just building a business in terms of traffic, I think it's important to diversify and never rely just on one single point of failure additionally. And also making sure that whatever channel you use, you always take it from traffic that you have access to traffic that you actually own. right? So even if you use, let's say you don't use Google SEO at all, but you use YouTube and then you use LinkedIn and you use Twitter, et cetera, any single one of those platforms one day can turn around and say, listen, we don't like the content you're producing anymore. We're going to shut you down. And you're not going to have access to that audience anymore, right? And then you've lost all the hard work that you've compounded over years. And so what I like to do is make sure that we're converting that traffic from views into email addresses and leads that way. And then you have a lot more control because no matter what happens, you've got access to an email list that's very targeted towards what you sell. And that's an asset.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people, for me, it's always, always been about the end goal, like sales, leads, and that side of it. I think in the industry, there's a big disconnection by a majority of SEOs that don't look at that side. They said it's just about rankings and traffic. But me, I mean, I started in this industry and I built 120 plus web lead generation websites. I started building a lead generation business. So for me, my goal's always been, how can I generate the best quality lead possible, right? And that's how I've always been. But I think that if you just look at rankings and traffic, you know, there's such a disconnection there.
Yeah, it doesn't matter how much traffic you get, it's how much money you make, right? That's the most important thing. It's like these vanity metrics of like, okay, ranking number one or getting 10,000 traffic or whatever, that doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to grow your business or you're going to make money. And so, for example, if you ranked for like, I don't know, Kim Kardashian sunglasses, you might get 100 times more traffic than me, but you won't make 100 times more money because it's a pretty useless term to rank for unless you're affiliating some of her sunglasses. And so, yeah, I think the focus has to be on ROI. And it doesn't matter how much traffic you get, it's how much money you make.
Right. So now I want to touch upon your affiliate sites. Has your strategy for your affiliate sites changed over time?
Yeah, I think it's just a case of constantly learning and improving, right? So for me, what I like to do over time is just build out these systems step by step that are going to help us rank better, get more traffic, and also squeeze more money from the traffic that we're getting. And so I think it's just a case of learning and implementing that and taking action quickly, right? So for example, if you find a better affiliate scheme or a better way to monetize, like for me, I'm not necessarily loyal to affiliate marketing. I'm loyal to what's going to convert the best. And sometimes what you do, for example, is you might have an affiliate scheme that's working really well, but actually you only see a tiny percentage. And then you're going to switch out to maybe your own tool or your own info product or your own coaching program. And that's probably the smarter way to make money long term. So I think it's just about learning and implementing very quickly and building great systems that make sure people get everything done they should be.
So during your lifetime of starting your business, what was the moment, like the light bulb moment, that think, this is it. You know, I'm starting now to really earn some decent money from this. I mean, what happened? What did that look like?
Yeah, I think it was one of my websites started making, I think it was about like probably $5,000 or something like that, just one website. And I was like, wow, this is actually working. It's actually consistent. The money we make is compounding over time. And so when you see something like that, I think the level of intensity you want to work at increases, and then you just learn more and more. You become more passionate about it. I think sometimes it's not necessarily when you get into it that you're passionate about it. It's when you've done it a lot and you've got good at it. That's when you become passionate because you're like, wow, this is great fun. This is like a game, you know?
Yeah. So when you're saying it's like a game, obviously when your sites are doing really well and recently, you know, you've just been hit by a manual penalty and literally that revenue vanishes, what goes on in your mind at that point?
honestly, like that situation, I thought that the websites deserved to get clapped and it was just a matter of time. So for me, like even 12 months ago, I was saying, you know, this is what's working for me right now. I'm not expecting it to work for a long time. I wouldn't recommend it for everyone. And it's a high risk strategy, right? And so I always knew from day one. In fact, I was surprised that it didn't get hit sooner. And so for me in that situation, it didn't bother me at all financially. It was totally fine. It's like, oh, that deserved to happen. Okay.
Right. Do you know what? I totally admire you saying that, because a lot of people have said, oh, you know, they don't get, you know, it's not my fault, you know, it shouldn't have been hit and this and that. But some of the websites that I've seen that's been hit, that people's contacted me about, just like you said, they deserve to get hit. There were literally no value to it apart from spamming keywords on the internet.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. Like for me, I've always said, you know, like I'm doing this for a fun experiment, but you should manually edit your content before you post it, and you should check through it line by line. And I've been very aware that I want to make it very clear that this is fun and it's an experiment, but it's not what I recommend for everyone. Like if these sites get hit, it's fine. There's no victims here. And I think that Google have to do something like this. It's one of those.
Yeah, I've always made a point of saying, look, you can experiment because they're your own websites. You know, I mean, it's you that's taking the risk. You know what the risks are, and that's fine. But when people start trying to copy what you're doing on somebody else's brand and somebody else's business, especially if they employ people, now that is something that, you know, I'm totally against. Like, it's probably something you'd never recommend either.
No, I mean, for me, like, I made it very clear that we never sold. I mean, like, I think AI or human content, like, it still has a future. But it's, again, it's about quality control. But for me personally, and I've always said this from day one, is that we don't sell AI content to our clients. We only have human writers in our team. We've never done AI for our clients in terms of link building or in terms of content. And so I've always been very clear of the risks and what can happen. But I think that's what I see with most people, is that they don't tell everyone, this is what you should do. They just say, this is what's working for me.
Yeah, I think I relate this to an article a famous SEO name published I can't remember when, maybe 5 years ago. And they said, we've done a case study, and in the title, if you put a bracket and a number in the title, then we've seen a positivity through click-through rates. Literally, after that case study, I was looking at a website, and an e-commerce website, and every single title had a bracket and a number in, whether it was relevant or not. And I think sometimes SEOs need to think. they need to step out to think, just because something's working in this specific time and relatability doesn't mean that it's right for you. You should, because it's just the SEO laziness that think, oh, well, that's worked for them, we'll do it for us. But they need to relate to what they're doing.
Yeah, for me, like, I like to make decisions based on fundamental principles, right? So first principle thinking, which helps you sort of with any industry, whether it's SEO, whether it's YouTube or whatever, focus on some fundamental truths of life that are always going to be right. So for example, focusing on facts over opinions is one, and I know we touched that earlier, but additionally, critical thinking as well, you know, like separating the information that you receive versus the information that you should actually take on board and implement, right? So for example, if you run a business, and I know you run a lot of websites, you're kind of like a chief editor where you have 1,000 things you can do, but only one or two are necessary. And it's your job as a CEO or a website owner or whatever to make sure that you filter down to the right inputs.
Yeah. Now, going on to this update, a lot of that's just happened or in the process of happening, a lot of people are saying it's an AI update. Personally, I have websites that use AI content, and I haven't seen any negativity with them. For me, I don't think this is an AI update. I just think it's a trashy content update. You know, what's your views on it?
That's exactly what I've seen. It's like, it's not about how you create the content. And I know Google have put that in their guidelines too. It's more about what is the quality of the content like. That seems to be the issue. Now, that doesn't mean that there aren't some, you know, spammy or low quality websites out there still ranking. But this seems to be the focus for Google, which is just improving the quality of the search results, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's what it's always been about.
Yeah. And that comes down to a fundamental truth, right? It's like Google always going to try and work on improving the quality of the search results because that improves the user experience, which means they make more money.
Right. Now, a question that people ask me lots of time is, what is quality content then? Now, from my perspective, it's, well, does that content convert into quality leads? And if the content converts, then it's useful to the people reading it, or else it won't convert. But from your perspective, do you have any content quality personal guidelines that you follow?
Yeah, so the SEO checklist I have is more practical than just the philosophy of it, right? So the SEO checklist I talked about earlier, it's like you can follow step by step exactly what you need to do to make sure that's a quality piece of content. But one of the things that I find with YouTube, for example, and this is kind of my measure of whether I'm going to publish a video or not, is how much value does it bring to the end user, right? So it's not just about making sure you answer their question, but entertaining them and informing them along the way and making sure that they want to watch the next one, kind of like a TV series, right? And so when people watch my videos, they're like, wow, that was crazy. I want to see the next one, the next one, the next one. And they're kind of entertained and inspired along the way as well. And so this is the way that I see quality content is. It's kind of like a Netflix series, right? Some of the best Netflix series that anyone else has watched are usually the ones that you want to binge watch the most. And why is that? Well, it's because they're inspiring. They create emotional reactions. They trigger people. They make people want to keep, they sort of hook people in and, you know, make you want to see the next one. And also they're usually very, very notable and unique in terms of, okay, I'm going to talk to someone about that. I'm going to mention this crazy episode that happened the other day.
Yeah. Do you think then, I call it scenarios, right? I mean, some of the biggest impact I've had with things are, if I'm being perfectly honest, are the things I haven't actually structured or done, you know, in depth and mapped out and everything. It's just, I was talking to somebody yesterday about a certain thing and I've just created something about that. And that's the sort of stuff that actually does better than the well-structured and mapped out stuff, because it's about a personal scenario. And is that like when you're talking emotional connection, is other people are going to have that emotional connection with that scenario because lots of people are talking about it. And is that the sort of thing you sort of talking about?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, you know, if you zoom out of just SEO, because we tend to get in our own little bubble of SEO, right? But if you zoom out way out of that and you just look at content in general, for example, stuff that people absolutely love and they'll make memories to it for the whole life. For example, like songwriting. With songwriting, it's all about show, don't tell. And it's all about capturing those personal experiences that everyone can relate to. And so whether it's with songwriting, whether it's with YouTube videos, whether it's with blog content, it all kind of relates in terms of captivating someone, sort of triggering their emotions, making sure that they can respond to that in a and relate to that in a meaningful way. So yeah, if you're talking about like the top 1% of content,
yeah,
that's not going to happen for most sites. But yeah, if you can go into that granular detail, I mean, and just going back to that structure focus as well. I mean, for example, if you look at songwriting, it's a very messy and sort of, it's a process that's all over the place, right? You can't really structure it like any art. And so when it comes to content, I think that's the same with YouTube videos or blog content as well. It's like, it doesn't have to be neat and organized. Sometimes the best works are the most messy as well.
Yeah, I'm going to say it's one of the scenarios that I relate this to is well-known comedians. Why are they so famous and so good at the job? Because they're just talking about everyday experiences that people relate to, that people connect with, you know, and that's the, it's like the hook, that is me, you know, that is me. And this is the sort of, when you say the SEO bubble type of thing and stepping outside, and I think that's, you know, they need to start relating more to that.
Yeah, 100%. I think that's observational as well, right? Like if you look at the best comedy or the best songs, they notice the subtleties in life. And it's more about, it's not about the topic, it's more about the observations along the way, right? And like the tiny details that most people miss.
Yeah, I'm loving this conversation, by the way. It's gone in this is totally unscripted. I've nothing written down. And if I'm very truthful, it's gone down a totally different route than I thought it would. You know, and this is why it's unscripted. Like I said, I don't have any prejudged perceptions about anything. I joined this to have an honest chat. And when we go forward then as an SEO industry, what would you say is one of the things that a lot of SEOs miss?
Well, I think it's about thinking about the user, right? So quite often a lot of people focus on the KPIs of like how much content did I produce, how many backlinks did I build, etc. But they don't think about, okay, how is the person going to respond when they see this content, right? So for example, when I create a YouTube video, I always think like, okay, what will people react like when they see this or when I talk like this or when I talk about this workflow, et cetera? Are they inspired? Are they motivated? Are they entertained? Or are they bored out of their mind? And it's really about putting yourself in the shoes of the audience.
Yeah. Now, there's been massive talk about content topic hubs in the industry. Basically, you know, going to the SEO tools and basically writing about every single thing that gets searched about a certain topic. What's your personal thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think this relates to topical authority, right? Where you cover pretty much every single thing someone could want to know about that particular topic. And to me, I think that Google is always looking for authority, right? So I don't know if you saw Glenn Allsop's report recently where basically 16 companies dominate the SERPs in terms of the percentage of traffic sent to each site. And why is that? It's because they're the authorities, they're the experts, right? So how do you become the expert in the eyes of Google? Well, obviously, there's things like backlinks, there's things like the quality of your content, there's the actual author behind that site, etc. But a big part of it is how much content do you create and around that one particular topic, right? So if you have one website that's talked about ice cream once, and one website that's talked about ice cream 100 times, which one's the expert? It's that one with the 100 times, right?
Is it though? Is it a case of the more content you produce about a certain topic, then that's the authority? The reason I'm saying this, because I'm all about context as well, I recently looked at a business and their website and their content is doing well. But when I analyze the traffic, only 3.2% of the traffic would have potential to turn into a lead.
That's an interesting one.
Now, that's the reason, because I, as I've said previously here, I'm all about the end goal. And for me, producing mass amounts of content, whether it's very high quality or, you know, done by a specialist or whatever, for me, if all you're doing is driving people to a website for the sake of a topic that's not going to generate any business impact, is it worth the time? Or, you know, for me, I'd much rather invest the time and energy and money into creating content that has the potential to turn into a lead or an appointment or a sale.
Yeah, I see what you mean. So you're basically asking, where's the money? And if it doesn't make money, what's the point?
Yeah, but I just think a lot of the industry have got into this mindset of, well, topical authority. Okay, for this client is a landscape gardener. I don't know why I've chosen that. It's just come out of my head.
But I always use that gardener.
So let's just write about every single thing relating to landscape gardening. And I think that's they sort of took the business element out of it and just thinking about traffic.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah, so they're going for a lot of like top of funnel queries that actually don't bring money.
Yeah, I mean for me, it's just like that site I looked at, 3.2%. I mean, yes, it's getting ranked, it's driving lots of traffic, but realistically, is it helping that business? Some people have said to me that it is, because without all this extra content, that business wouldn't seem to be the topical authority on that subject, and that's why it's needed.
Yeah, I see what you mean. I don't know. I mean, as well, even if you're getting informational keywords and even if you're ranking for informational terms, the good thing is you can still convert that into leads or opt-ins for your business. So that's the way that I see it. It's like, okay, it's okay to rank for informational keywords because maybe you're using that content to attract backlinks, which in itself would bring more money to your site. Or additionally, maybe you're using that content to attract more email opt-ins. And it's not necessarily that you're going to convert them today, but that might turn into like a $10,000 or $12,000 a year lead in 6 months or 12 months once you've built a relationship with them. That's the way that I see it with, for example, my SEO content. Is like, even if they opt in for free today, I'm totally fine with that because we've had clients who have followed us for years. And then one day they're like, right, going to buy from Julian Goldie's agency now.
Yeah. Yeah. I think a lot of people miss those opportunities. And I hold my hands up. I have. I mean, you know, miss the opportunities to build your own databases, build your own email list, build your own. I call it, I hate the word, I forgot the word. It's unscripted and, you know, I forgot the word. But to build your own assets, as a business, and I think that content people are pushing out and they're not creating the biggest benefits from it.
Yeah, that comes down to leverage as well, right? It's like, for example, the reason that I track all of my marketing platforms is like, okay, what's the leverage like? So in terms of how can I put the least amount of input for the maximum output? And then that's a huge lever that I can pull. And so if you're not thinking about your content in that way, then for sure you're leaving money on the table because you're not analyzing your content from how much money is it going to make you. You're analyzing it from maybe how much content can I produce or how many views can I get, but that's not going to keep your lights on in your business.
No. Now, the time is rocking on. So is there anything that you feel the audience needs to know that we haven't spoken about so far?
There's so much to it. There's a huge wealth of information, I guess, we could talk about. I mean, we didn't touch on link building, but maybe we could do another interview in the future, and that would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I specifically avoided link building just because it's a minefield. And we could have gone on forever with link building. But, yeah, I mean, in the future, we could go down the link building route. But, well, what conversations would you like to have, and where can people find you?
Yeah, so, I mean, anything. I love to talk about SEO or AI. I love to talk about marketing and business in general. You can find me on my YouTube channel, Julian Goldie, SEO. And there's content on there pretty much every single day. So new live streams, new video tutorials, etc. Lots of experiments. So feel free to check it out.
Well, Julian, many thanks for joining me today.
Appreciate it. Thanks so much.
You've been listening to the Unscripted SEO Interview Podcast with me, Mark A. Preston. Join us next time as I interview more top SEO professionals.